Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. First order of business, Representative Backer, the minutes are before you. Would you move the minutes, please?
I would move to accept the minutes presented.
Thank you. Minutes for March 14th. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you. First up, we have Lewick Bill, House File 3557. Representative Lewick. Assistant Commissioner Myers is going to be helping out. Representative Lewick, I would move to re-refer House File 3557 to go to GovOps. Then we do have is there an amendment? Yeah. How do you want to proceed? Do you want to do the amendment first, Representative Lewick?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I think to get the bill in shape, we could just do that amendment that we just took a big leap forward with that amendment.
So do you want to move the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move that amendment, and then we have the bill as I would like to present it.
Very good. The DE-1 is before us. Members, all those in favor of the DE-1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. And the bill is in the order that you'd like. Representative Lewick, could proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a work in progress, frankly. We actually passed this bill, and the governor signed a provision to adjust the mileage on dealing with recreational trails from 10 to 25 miles and provide a little bit of breathing room on some of the administrative items you have to go through. That got kind of tangled up in rulemaking last year, so we didn't get that completed. So that 3557 is an attempt to help both DNR and EQB push through the rulemaking process, and that's what the DE amendment basically suggests the appropriate language necessary to simply expand and give us more flexibility so we're not grinding up resource dollars on administrative items when we could be actually putting down trails. So, and certainly Assistant Commissioner Meyer can probably speak to any details if necessary. But, again, this is just an effort to move this forward and finally get it done, just change 10 to 25.
Very good. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. And EQB, as well as the DNR, have been working with the author on this language. The language before you today, as Representative Lewick has stated, has been passed by the legislature before. It's a little bit different because we're trying to anticipate or deal with the comments and concerns we had from the ALJ. So everybody's in consensus on this. And just for the record, Mr. Chairman, the DNR does support environmental review. It needs to be done on the right place at the right time. This helps us clarify where that is and how that can be streamlined and work more effectively. The one thing that Representative Lewick mentioned that's kind of still in flux right now is we feel we need to define legally constructed route to clarify this term for when this goes before the ALJ. So we'll work on that language between here and GovOps, and I believe it'll be coming back here most likely, maybe go to the floor. Wherever it goes, we'll make sure that we get that language there that works and that we'll be comfortable with the ALJ as well.
Okay. I don't see the word reasonable in here in the language anywhere, Representative Lewick.
Well, of course, it primarily applies to the northern part of the state, so that's assumed.
Good catch. Good catch. Members, Representative Hornstein.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Mr. Meyer, just to be clear on this, so the exemption is for mandatory EAW, but there's still a discretionary process if if need be. It's just it's that one category of mandatory.
Commissioner Meyer,
interrupt the point. Yes, thank you for clarifying that. It doesn't, and this is specifically for these pieces here that I think everybody's in consensus with will work. That have already been disturbed to a certain degree, and we're just trying to route a trail or an existing trail and expand the uses on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, you're welcome. Other questions, members? Good. I like the expanded opportunities for the ATVs. Okay, so then with that, there's no other questions? Anybody else wish to testify? Very good. So I'll renew my motion for House File 3557 to be referred to GovOps as amended by the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? There you go. You're on your way, Representative Lewick. Keep working on it. Okay, next up is House File 3422. Okay, so the House File 3422 is before us. I will move to send House File 3422 to the General Register. And we also have the A2 amendment. I'd like to move that to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Discussion on the A2 amendment. Very good. All those in favor of the A2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment's adopted. The bill's in the shape we'd like. We have testifying on this today, Jill Townley, Executive Coordinator for the DNR, the Legislative Coordinator for the DNR, excuse me.
A little different.
Yeah, Legislative. Ms. Townley, proceed, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm here today to speak on House File 3422. This bill is mostly technical in nature. This bill proposes legislation that will make use of cast nets on select waters permanent, and we'll make changes that will be beneficial to anglers. I'll start by providing just a little bit of background in support of the changes, and then go through the proposed legislation section by section. So starting with a little background on cast net use. Some of you may remember legislation in 2015 authorized a 3-year pilot project to evaluate using cast nets to harvest gizzard shad for non-commercial personal use as bait. Gizzard shad are a native fish and are a particularly effective bait for catfish and sturgeon. Now, the DNR was concerned about the movement of gizzard shad from where they were caught to other water bodies because they are susceptible to viral hemorrhagic septicemia, a fish disease known as VHS. So hence the reason for the pilot study. Now, DNR has completed this study and a report, and we found that cast nets are a selective method for catching gizzard shad with only about a 1 to 3% target catch rate. And there was a limited movement of shad. So now ending on a little bit of background on commercial nets themselves. Commercial fishermen have large, costly nets that prior to statute in 2017 required them to have separate gear for certain infested waters. In 2017, legislation gave the DNR the authority to remove tags from the commercial fishing gear after that gear has been decontaminated to reduce the spread of aquatic invasive species. So this would allow commercial fishermen to reduce costly nets after they have been decontaminated according to a protocol specified by the DNR. New language would require the commercial fishermen to tag nets used in water bodies listed as infested with aquatic plants, including starry stonewort. Current statute regulates the use of commercial fishing gear in waters with Eurasian water milfoil, not other invasive aquatic plants. So now going through this section by section, in Section 1, we add portions of the Minnesota River to open as use of cast nets and strike the expiration language of December 1, 2017. In Section 2, you may recall last session changes were made to how fishing equipment is identified or tagged in infested waters. This provision adds waters listed for aquatic plants or aquatic macrophytes other than Eurasian water milfoil and requires the DNR to have a protocol for decontamination. This ensures that industry and our staff are on the same page about these requirements and expectations and that we can tailor the decontamination requirements to gear, season, CDCs, and so on. I would like to note that Eurasian water milfoil is not included in Section 2 because it has a separate process already defined in Statute 84D, Subdivision 4B. Moving on to Section 3, this section also adds portions of the Minnesota River as open to the use of cast nets, changes the measurement to a 5-foot radius, which increases the size, and uses radius instead of diameter, as cast nets are typically sold by the radius and not the diameter. Those are the extent of the changes, and at this time I can take any questions.
Very good. Good job. Just real quickly first, too, I was a little disappointed you did bring a couple of cast nets to demonstrate how they use these. But Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Townley, I'm focusing on the crayfish harvesting and wondering, do we have any requirement with rusty crayfish for notifying the DNR if a crayfish harvester finds a rusty crayfish? I know that in law we have for some of the invasive carp a requirement for reporting. How would someone who's crayfish harvesting, if they're catching rusty crayfish, is there any training to identify rusty crayfish or report them? How does that work?
Ms. Donnelly.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I believe there might
be a friend.
I might need to phone a friend on this.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yeah, my name is Heidi Wolf, and I supervise the Invasive Species Unit with the Minnesota DNR. Thank you. Chair, committee members, I can answer that question. We don't require people identify. It's actually really hard to identify rusty crayfish, especially in the field, by a non-expert. We even have experts who need some time to take a look at them. So right now there's not any law requiring that they identify or report them. There is laws regarding harvesting crayfish. It's up to 25 pounds for personal use. You don't need a permit. If you're going to go over that, a permit is required.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how many commercial crayfish harvesters are there?
It does vary. Thank you.
Yep.
Committee and members, it does vary year to year. I do happen to know the number because we're dealing with the red swamp crayfish issue. Last year, I believe there was 2 commercial harvesters in the state, so it's not a very large number.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with those harvesters, do you do a training program with the invasive? I know not mandatory, but just some effort on trying to, because I think the more, as these invasives come in, how are we reaching folks to identify?
Ms. Bull.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Right now, I don't believe there's a mandatory. They're actually permitted through fisheries, so I don't know if there's anyone else who wants to step in, but to my knowledge, they are not required to take a training program at this time. Of course, they work pretty closely with our staff through that permitting process. Obviously we're giving them as much info as possible, but I don't believe there's a specific.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since you are the invasive species coordinator, where in the state are we seeing the invasive crayfish come in, just geographically on the different species?
Ms. Wolf.
2 different issues. Rusty crayfish are primarily found right now in the Northeast where there's established populations, and there's different efforts, especially some local efforts up in Region 2 Duluth area where they're trying to actually harvest to extinction, and we don't know if that will work, but we're permitting that and working closely with it and supporting it. The other issue we have going on is red swamp crayfish. They are imported. They're illegal and prohibited invasive species in the state. Unfortunately, they're also really desirable for crayfish oils, and so what's happening is restaurants and other groups are importing them illegally into the state. So whenever we find out that's happening, we have a whole process where we're contacting people and telling them they cannot do that and giving them what their options are. We can permit them to import frozen dead. That's one option. We also try to get them to use rusty. Unfortunately, they like to do these feeds really early in the year, and there's not a lot of rusties out then, and they haven't been harvested. So we're working with people as we become aware, to try to make them aware of what they're doing, what their options are.
Jeff Hansen.
Just one final. So when you're working with, does that mean working with local, is it the ag department or local health departments or restaurant association or community groups? How do you reach the crawfish boilers? I'm assuming they don't have an association, Mr. Chair.
Well, I don't know about that, but there's a lot. Ms. Lowe.
Yeah. So what's happening typically is they're coming to us. They're hearing about this. We do a lot of press releases about the issue, especially around this time, to say it's illegal. Another red swamp crayfish is for classroom pets. People like to use them for that. And then, unfortunately, they also like to have a ceremony and let them go at the end of the year. So we're trying to – there's a variety of pathways, but we're trying to let people know that it's illegal. So we're working with people one-on-one, restaurateurs, when we find out they're doing this. We're also doing press releases and other information out in general, and we have been coming together and thinking more and more about how is there a restaurant association or another broad pathway we could follow. We are going to be talking at some of the teachers' conferences about the classroom pet issue to try to get that clarified for people that they should not choose this as their classroom pet.
Representative Hansen, you got more than you started with there, I think. Okay, Representative Karen Clark.
Just a quick question. What does the decontamination process involve? What does that look like?
To the testifiers.
Thank you.
Yep.
Right now, what we've said is that we'll come up with a protocol, and the challenge there is the protocol would be different based on the specific invasive species. Part of this is that although Eurasian water milfoil is covered, something newer like Starry Stonemark isn't currently. This will cover it, but we'll have to go back and make sure that we have a process depending on what the invasive is. And if the water was infested with multiple invasive species, zebra mussels and Starry Stonemark, the process will be a little bit different. So we'll come up with a set of protocols that are really clear that work for the species or mixture of species that are in a specific water. And right now it's things like freezing for multiple days. That's very effective, depending on the species.
So, Mr. Clark. Chair, so you take the nets and freeze them?
Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Anything else, members? I just got a text message from Assistant Commissioner Meyer. He's going to be doing a demonstration on cast nets from the top floor of the parking ramp on the street office building at noon today. Representative Hansen, you want to join him?
I'm more into the crayfish right now, the boil. On this issue, though, I think, you know, I've noticed elsewhere in the legislature, there's things moving on shrimp. And we're hearing here on invasive species. And I think that those shrimp bills should come here, because I think we should look at what the impacts are with invasive species, diseases, pathogens. There aren't what we're talking about here is establishing an industry that you know, we just have two instances here where we're hearing multiple methods of transport of things into our environment. That's just one one critter, multiple pathways. So when we're deliberately bringing things in, I think we better be very prudent, very careful that we're not releasing. Our history is rife with mistakes in terms of invasive species. And so the desire for diversity in terms of our agriculture is important. But we better make sure we know what we're doing before we start this.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, with that, I will renew my motion to send House File 3422 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. The bill is moving. Next bill before us is House File 3350. Now that bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. A later bill. We do have the A1 amendment with that as well.
It's an awesome amendment.
Yeah. Son. It's pretty controversial. So the A1 amendment, Representative Hansen's amendment, would you like to address that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the amendment is not on beer, but on the date. I think if most of you were asked when does the fishing season end and the new season start, or when do some of the seasons end and when did the new season start, you'd say the new season starts on March 1st and the season ends on February 28th. And for some things it does, but other things it doesn't. So I was contacted by a constituent who thought that February 28th was the end of a season, but it was the last Sunday of February. So they got a ticket on February 26th because they thought it was February 28th or 29th in the quadrennial years. So
that's leap year, members. In case
yes, there is a leap year. So my amendment is to synchronize those things. I don't think there's any malice intent here. I think that people are getting caught in a definitional problem. And so I would hope the DNR would support this. It apparently relates just to walleye, sauger, northern pike, musclunge, largemouth bass, smallmouth bass. So it's really a 3 or 4 day, but next year I think the last Sunday would be February 24th. So you would have several days where there's a problem. So I'd ask for support for that.
So, Representative Hansen, I'm curious, your constituent that had the unfortunate of getting the ticket, how many consecutive years did that person have a fishing license? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, if you live where Representative Eklund and I do, we'd actually like to see the date changed quite a bit differently, probably, because the season ends April 14th. But, and, of course, fishing season, it revolves around the walleye season, realizing that panfish and all kinds of other species are open year-round. But we could have a very long, protracted debate on the dates. I will say this. I was home this weekend, and I was planning to go fishing on Saturday, and we were discussing this bill and so forth yesterday in Ms. Zipko's office, and I looked at my license and I went, oh my goodness, am I glad I didn't go ice fishing. So, Representative Meyer, oh, excuse me, okay. Wow. Castnet, throw that over me and drag me out. So, on the A1 amendment, any discussion on the A1 amendment? Yeah, I know that. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you, and I have discussed this issue with Representative Hansen. Unfortunately, it's not just as easy as changing the date. This does have impacts for the resource. Previously, the ice fishing season, or the walleye fishing season, game fish season, if you want to call it that, used to close before the middle of February, basically. What we did is we made sure that it was still open until after President's Day. It's kind of the date that we have right now. I mean, the major impact this would have on lakes where we have slot sizes and things like that, such as Mille Lacs Lake, right? So Mille Lacs, we had about $7,000 of walleye harvest this season, we estimate, with our creel census work. This could put us over that, and it's just going to change limits and things like that. So I think we can continue talking about this concept, but just to change it without consulting our fisheries biologists and the impact of what it's going to have statewide. You know, perhaps if we went to a 4 walleye limit statewide, it'd be easier to do.
Easy enough.
Yeah, sorry. But, you know, I can't support this language right now without having a more in-depth conversation with our fisheries biologists about what the impacts will be to the harvest.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, you're laying this bill over, so if the amendment went on, right, this would be the opportunity for it to be engaged, and it could come off later, correct?
We could do that. Yes, we certainly could. And I'm willing to continue the discussion. It may be simpler if you would withdraw the amendment at this point, with my assurance that we'll continue to work together. Sometimes when you're fixing things that you thought you were fixing and now you're unfixing it, it makes it look a little clumsy. But I'll defer to you.
So, Mr. Chair, then the opportunity to put it back on would be when the omnibus bill would be here. Neuberger's nodding his head over there. Okay, I will draw it. With your assurance.
Scout's honor. Eagle Scout.
Okay.
All right. All right, so the A1 amendment is withdrawn. And then at, where are we at? Okay. Back to the bill, House File 3350. Testifiers on the bill, Mr. Bob Meyer, and then we've got Craig Engwald, two old friends.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, one last comment on the Hansen Amendment, if I may. We always like to end our seasons on a weekend or a Sunday or a Monday. I mean, this has, next year, then we would have the walleye season closed on a Thursday. I think it's something we have to take in consideration. How do we post those days, and how's that done? But we'll continue talking about that.
So, Commissioner Meyer, just an interjection here. I've had a fishing license for 41 years in Minnesota. Well, actually more than that. And hypothetically, if I had been fishing on Saturday or somebody else had been, and the CO comes around and I'm guilty, I don't have a fishing license, a current one, I mean, does enforcement take into consideration and look and go, man, oh, man, this guy's had a fishing license for 41 years. He's never had a violation of any kind. What kind of discretion do you think they would use in that case?
Mr. Chairman, we always encourage our officers to use discretion wherever possible. In that situation, I mean, it would be a case-by-case basis. If you had fish perhaps laying on the ice, it would be a different story. Yeah. If you're just sitting there and it was an honest mistake, I would hope that that officer would have some ability to not issue you a ticket, perhaps issue you a warning and make sure you go buy a license, things like that. Yeah. Those are the ways that we want to handle those situations.
North of Highway 2 would refer to that as reasonable. Thank you. Mr. Engwald, to the bill.
Yes, thanks, Chair Fabian and committee members. Craig Engwald, Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, here to testify in support of HF 3350. For many years, deer hunters across the state have been seeking a clear accounting of where their deer hunting dollars go. They're seeking greater assurance that their deer dollars are actually going to support deer management. As many of you are aware, under the $30 license that's been in effect for many years, $26 of that license went to the general game and fish account and only $2 to the deer management account. And so when the proposal to increase the license to $34 last year came in, we conditioned our support of that upon a change in that equation to give us greater assurance that deer dollars were going in for deer management. So we had sought this change from $2 to $16 in the deer management account. This bill accomplishes that, and quite simply, we support it strongly.
Thank you. And this will be to both of the testifiers, what's the definition of deer management?
I'll give what we view that as all things pertaining to habitat improvement, things that will benefit deer and deer hunters, frankly. It's pretty broad definition.
I understand. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, you'll see that was distributed a copy of a letter dated last May 21st, 2017, from Commissioner Landwehr to both the House and Senate chairs. This is a discussion point we had last year as we were increasing these licenses. However, we couldn't, the split that we agreed to needed to occur statutorily, so you'll see that this bill is a direct relation to or output from our letter that we had. There's two issues that we need to try to continue working on as this moves forward. One is the effective date, from March 1st rather than July 1st. It's just a spending. We had a conversation with fiscal staff and legal staff last night about it, and we'll work on that issue with you as we move forward. And then the other one is the language that strikes the statutory appropriation. Previous to this, the DNR had
line 1.20 and 1.21.
Yes. So previously, when this deer management account was only getting about $2 million a year, we had access to those funds year-round in case emergencies came up or spending needed to come up. I understand the concern with the legislature on striking this right now with the amount of money that will be going into the account. However, we do need to come up with a way to provide us access to the same amount of funding that we had previously before this change in the deer account came about. So that's another issue that we'll be working with staff and yourself on, Mr. Chairman, and the deer hunters as well as we move forward. So,
Mr. Engwall.
We're neutral on those. We came here to speak to the $16, so we'll be happy to work with the department in ways we can.
Okay. Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, Mr. Assistant Commissioner Meyer, if you can speak to where is the money currently coming from to address chronic wasting disease with the testing and the extra work that the DNR has to do? Is that coming from the deer management account, or is that coming from somewhere else?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, and thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. Last year, we received an appropriation from the Heritage Hansen account at one time for about $500,000. Unfortunately, our costs were over $1 million to do that, so we did take the rest of those funds from the Game and Fish Fund. I can't tell you exactly what account they came, but assume it came from the general Game and Fish Fund account, but I'll get you a breakout of where those dollars were exactly and how much we were paying. The deer hunters were paying for that disease one way or another. The licenses, the money that they have, licensing dollars go into the Game and Fish Fund. This will help identify those costs in the future, as Director Ingwall was talking about. The deer hunters will be able to see in our annual Game and Fish Fund report where those $16 or the revenues that we went into the deer account were. Next year, I'm assuming if we don't deal with that funding issue, you will see a line item in that report taking money out of the deer account for CWD's enforcement and that monitoring activity.
I see Ms. Julik is kind of nodding her head over there on some of these numbers and accounts. So, okay. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would you say that chronic wasting disease is a one-time, one-year problem?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer.
Representative. No, in fact, so what we did last year throughout the state in these areas that we had under quarantine, so to speak, we did monitoring. Crow Wing County, we did extensive monitoring and sampling. We didn't detect any more cases, so we're going to back off a little bit, but we still need to continue that monitoring. Our protocol is that we need to test for three. If we have three clean years, then we consider that area free of CWD, at least temporarily. So we need to test in those areas for 3 years or more. You will see extensive ramp up in Winona County, for example, from what we just saw there. And also we need to continue our work at the same level, if not more, in Fillmore County because of the additional cases that we found through our sample.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically my concern is that, you know, our deer hunters statewide are going to be the ones on the hook, and the money is going to be coming away from other management and habitat things that we're trying to accomplish to address an issue that's clearly linked to the deer farm industry. And, you know, I passed out an article earlier this week about that problem and really that being kind of the epicenter of where this problem is developing. I'm wondering, Mr. Engwall, while you're up here, if you could just speak a little bit about what you're hearing from your members and whether you think this is an issue. You know, do we need to address chronic wasting disease this session?
Mr. Engwall.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Becker-Finn, we're keenly interested in the CWD issue, no question about it. I was at the DNR Deer Plan meeting yesterday. We talked about it in depth. So, yes, we will be having further discussions about that. Today I'm focused like a laser beam on getting this money dedicated to the deer management account, so I really came here to speak to that. But on many occasions in the future, we'll be here to talk about our interest in CWD, which is great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just finally, I just want to make that connection that the money, putting the money in this count is very much related to chronic wasting disease and the funds that we're being forced to put into dealing with that issue. So I just want everyone who cares about deer hunting and deer hunters and our ability to continue to eat venison in Minnesota that we're always paying attention to that, because it really is related to that. And I would hate for all of our license dollars to be going to manage a problem that isn't actually created or exacerbated by deer hunters. So I thank you for speaking to that. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on Representative Becker-Finn, I'm looking at in the existing statute lines 2.4 through 2.7, the 50 cents that goes to emergency deer feeding and wild servant health management. So, Mr. Meyer, how much of that, I mean, how much are we spending on emergency deer feeding, and how much are we spending What's the reserve in that account?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to have Barb.
Phone a friend.
She could go through. She has a spreadsheet with the fund statement in there. So, Mr. Chairman, last year on our Game and Fish Fund statement, you'll see this, and I can provide the committee a copy of it. We had we spent $815,000 out of that account. There was a balance of 1.3. The carry forward that we're estimating will be about $300,000, and we'll be spending way more than that in the coming year. So I'll provide more detail in a response back to the committee with those numbers.
Yep. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we start aggregating these numbers, and I thought at the DNR roundtable that mentioning maybe about $3 million has been spent, so we have the special appropriation, we have this account, and then you have the game and fish account, and then I think we spent some LCSMR money as well on CWD. So I guess the number I would like to see is, since January 1st, 2017, how much money has been spent on chronic waste and disease response management and research by the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, we can provide that to the committee, and we will also provide kind of a historical context as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yep, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Engwall or Mr. Meyer, have we seen are we seeing impacts on the number of licenses purchased for deer hunting? So we've got the account here, and if we make these changes, but are we starting to see, I know there's a traditional up and down kind of based on the season, but are we seeing anything, particularly in those zones where there is CWD, are we seeing any reduction in the number of hunting licenses purchased where there are infections?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, last year, hunting licenses were pretty stable. I think they may have gone up a tick just because we had more deer that were out there. I know some people that I had talked to when we were bucks only may or may not have purchased a license that year. That was a couple years ago. So we'll provide, I can provide you a list by zone and the participation in those hunts and in the special hunts as well. I think that would be an interesting snapshot in time. I don't know what those numbers are right now myself, but overall, statewide, I know the numbers have been pretty stable.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it correct that the agencies are meeting with the Senate on CWD sometime today, or are the interests meeting today? Is there a meeting today, and is that a public meeting or a private meeting?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, there's a meeting scheduled today with the chairs of the House and Senate Environment Policy and Finance Committees and also commissioners of the Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, and the director of the Board of Animal Health. Try to figure out how are we going to move forward to making sure that the laws that are on the books are being enforced and that the state is adequately addressing this response to this issue.
Representative Hansen.
And the minority leads are not invited?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer.
It was not a meeting that I scheduled.
I think the meeting has been scheduled by Senator Ingebrigtsen. I was invited to the meeting as well. I'm sure that you can pick up the phone and give them a call. I don't know. Okay? But we can talk offline if you want, or even online if you want. I do know that this is an important issue, and we need to try and get things together on this. When we have different state agencies that are going different directions, they have different ideas and they have different plans, that's not a healthy situation. And we need to try to, as Commissioner Meyer says, come up with some ideas and a path forward. And I'm sure the Deer Hunters Association are supportive of that. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Just to follow up on the questions beforehand, we've been talking about past.
Can you speak up, please?
We've been talking about past expenditures. How do you project future expenditures in this biennium going forward? Because I think that's needs to be part of what you submit to the committee.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bouguenais, I can outline. I will make sure that that information is outlined in our response. We do know that we will have increased spending for at least 3 years, as I stated previously. If we find new outbreaks, that will increase those spending. And that spending, and it's going to vary a little bit depending on the part of the state and the logistics that we need to do for our CWD monitoring. But I will try to put something in there so you have an understanding of what the magnitude might be if we find new cases in other areas of the state.
Representative Wagenius, okay. Very good. Anything else, members? Okay. Then House File 3350 is laid over for possible inclusion. The conversation will continue. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm proud to announce that Celine Mary Strohmeyer was born earlier this morning.
Nice. Hopefully, Mom and everyone are resting well. Okay, next we have, where are we at here? Representative Eck, oh, you beat me to the punch. Good job. House File 2783, Representative Eklund. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hoppe, I don't believe we've killed a bill yet. We did kill one amendment today, but okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
I know as a retired teacher, you enjoy promptness, so that's why I was on my way up here. Okay, Mr. Chair, House File 2783 is an appropriation for a bridge to the Voyager ATV Country, ATV Club. And this will be a multi-use bridge. It'll be able to be used for snowmobile, ATV, off-road vehicle. The bridge is good designed to be able to accommodate a groomer, so we'll be able to get some pretty good equipment across it. And we've talked to the parties. They're all fine with where the appropriation's coming from, so we should be in good shape on this bill.
Should. That's good. Former Representative Hackbarth is on the list to testify. Would you come down, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Tom Hackbarth, I represent the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and we just want to let you know that we support the bill 100%. The ATV account is putting in the majority of the money into this project.
Very good. Members, have any questions, comments? Anybody else care to testify on the bill? Nope. Very good. Okay. And then with that, House File 2783 is laid over. Thank you. Next, House File 3416, another Eklund bill. And it does have an amendment, the A1 amendment. Would you care to explain the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment is an addition to the original bill, and it's to help take care of the wetland mitigation and other issues to finish up the Taconite Trail. The Taconite Trail will eventually be connected with the Prospector Loop, and I have a bonding bill in that's going to tie all these together that will make one master trailhead for the Taconite, the Mesabi, and the Prospector Loop in the Ely area.
Very good. So how many miles in total is that loop that you're talking about? You have an idea? Sorry.
I should have checked, Mr. Chair. That's, I apologize. It's over 20 miles.
Yep. Cool. Good. So the A1 amendment, all those in favor of the A1 amendment as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the shape that you'd like. Oh, we got the A2 amendment. Thank you. And again, Representative Eklund, would you explain your amendment? Okay. Pretty simple. Yep. You can see the date change, members. Yep.
Bring the A2 amendment out of my...
Yep. Representative Hackbarth. Excuse me, Mr. Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This was brought to us by the group, the clubs up there that have not finished this project, and we need to extend the time so the money is still available. It's expected that this is going to be completed this summer, and we just need a little extra time to get this completed, so keep the money available.
Thank you. Any questions on the A2 amendment? All those in favor of the A2? Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Those opposed? Amendments adopted. And we're back to the bill as amended. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just to continue the ongoing project of building the Prospector Trail Loop. The Lake County is the fiscal agent for this, but it accompanies two counties, St. Louis County and Lake County. And eventually, Mr. Chair, if we can get this done right, we're going to incorporate Cook County into it and have the trail go from at least Crane Lake to Grand Marais.
So cool.
I think it's going to be a terrific off season for our tourism industry up there, and I'll just add one more way for them to bring people to, in my opinion, the most beautiful district in the state.
Hey. Well, okay, do we have an amendment on that? What's the most beautiful district in the state? Very good. Any questions or comments, members? Okay, so then with that, House File 3416 is laid over as amended. Okay? Very good. Next, we have another Eklund bill. Actually, it's a Metza bill. House File 3478, this bill, too, will be laid over, and it does have the A1 amendment. So I will move the A1 amendment. Discussion to the A1. Would you care to explain the A1, Representative Eklund?
I think it just is the same thing as the last one, and I apologize, yep. Mr. Chair. Representative Metza said I was presenting this bill for him, and he didn't leave me a bill jacket, so I'm definitely a pinch hitter this morning. But anyway,
I'm sure the minority is fine with that. Mr. Hackbarth, can you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House Bill 3478 is, you may have heard about our project of connecting the area up in Virginia with the Gilbert site, and this is part of that plan, is to get that all connected to the new Virginia site for this ATV rec area with the Gilbert site that already exists. And 3478 is going to continue to make that connection. And the A1 amendment simply is part of that project, and this makes it easier for them to make this connection. It simply says that it no longer has to follow the snowmobile trail, that they can follow a different route. That's all that does.
Very good. Questions on the A1? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The amendment's adopted. Okay. To the bill, 3478, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill will just connect, as Representative Hackbarth mentioned, it will connect the existing ATV trail to the off-road vehicle trail that's already exists in Gilbert, and it'll just make it a little bit easier for permitting and other things on these trails going forward. And I'd like to add, Mr. Chair, on all these bills, we are currently working on a master plan for all these ATV clubs so we can bring them under one umbrella and work together more closely on interconnecting all these trails.
Well, good. There's a lot of enthusiasm in the ATV community, so keep it up. Any other questions on the bill? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author of the bill, or the substitute author, the destination of the best of trail.
The plaques have been ordered. I'm not sure what account it comes out of, but anything else? Okay, so then with that, House File 3478, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Oh, Representative Hansen.
What's happening?
Okay, yep, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as we're moving towards deadline, do you have a roadmap for next week on kind of should we plan on evenings?
That was part of my closing comments today. We do have a number of bills that we want to process. Rooms have been reserved for evenings. So all I can tell you right now is we've got a long list of things to go through, and stay tuned.
Representative Hornsby has been thinking of questions.
I welcome those.
Thank you.
Anything else? This went a lot quicker than we had thought today. So with that, we're adjourned.